Hi, I'm Jamie Staley, Director of Christian Education here at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church. I am excited to welcome you to another year of Crossroads in the Living Room podcasts. We have an exciting program year coming up with all sorts of great things to be talking about. I'm thrilled this morning to be joined by Reverend Dr. Scott Black Johnston, our senior pastor, to talk about our upcoming series, Faith and AI. So last spring, Scott, you and I talked about what a faithful response to AI might look like, and talked a little bit about how we could bring that to Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church. What made you think that this might be something worth talking about here at Fifth Avenue?
Great question. This morning in the New York Times, Thomas Friedman, the columnist, said that there are two things approaching the human race at a faster speed than almost anybody realizes that will change everything. The first is climate change, and the second is artificial intelligence. And from what I've been reading, and as I'm beginning to understand this whole realm, artificial intelligence has the possibility of changing human life, could potentially be a threat to human life in a way that almost nothing else has ever been.
What about our congregation? What made you think that this particular place in time, that this would be a good place for us to talk about this?
Yeah, I mean, I have two answers to that question. The first is really that we have a congregation that likes to stay engaged with contemporary issues. We have people who work at companies like Facebook and Google. We have people who are in the know on artificial intelligence and who will be throughout the upcoming educational series helping to resource us. So we've got some wonderful, you know, in-place resources. We have, you know, people who want to reflect. But the second reason really is I think artificial intelligence is such a big deal, especially from a moral and ethical angle. And I think that religious communities across the world ought to be sticking their oars in the water and engaging this conversation, because what's coming forward will have huge moral implications.
Absolutely. So moral and ethical, that just brings me right to our first person that is going to come speak to us for our Gatto lecture. We have Dr. Shannon Valor, who is joining us on Sunday, September 28th at 2 p.m. In our sanctuary and live stream. So folks at home, we really hope that you will be able to join us for that. Can you tell us a little bit more about why you think that Dr. Valor will be a good person to come, as she is an ethicist who deals with AI?
Yeah, I mean, her first book was on technology and the virtues. And I think she brings a perfect blend of what we need to have happening right now, which is a conversation about what are the ethical implications of this kind of technological, it's even beyond breakthrough, this sweeping technological change. AI is going to touch every aspect of human life. In fact, if you want to play a game, try naming some aspect of human life. And I bet you we can quickly speculate about how AI is going to be at least initially involved in that.
Can you give me one example?
Well, you're an educator. Education. You've already got schools in this country that are trying to spend a portion of the educational day having the children educated by AI programs. So education, healthcare. AI is going to be involved in healthcare from small measures to vast ones. Let's say that you had a heart valve transplant. Future heart valve transplants are going to have their own internal AI in there that's going to be measuring your blood pressure and making decisions about the opening and closing of that valve. Depending, this is an intelligent valve. So that's on a small level. On a vast level, AI is already involved in helping to map the human genome, in vaccine development, in cancer treatments. What AI is really, really good at is moving through vast quantities of data at a speed that human beings simply cannot, and finding patterns there. And then hopefully using those patterns in a good way. So medicine, politics. You've already got political forces around the world who are involved in using AI to build targeted ads, videos, picture ads, text, and they're making use of the algorithms that have been developed by these companies that assess what is it that Jamie Staley cares about and how can we flip her to vote for us? Or what is it that Jamie Staley is afraid of and how can we leverage that to get her to vote in a certain way? So AI is going to be involved in everything. It's going to be involved in product development. It's going to be, involved in developing new technologies. And there's a lot of concern around all of this about what this is going to mean for human beings in terms of jobs. If AI is going to be better at doing this thing and that thing and that thing, what will human beings have to do? And so that raises ethical questions. Now, those are probably the ones that are further out there on the horizon, but you have people already talking about, again, what it means to have a universal wage for people who may not be gainfully employed out there on the horizon somewhere. What will humans do with their time? And then, of course, there's the dark side of it all. not the complete unemployment seems kind of grim, especially to a Calvinist. But, there are those. I read a lot of science fiction growing up. The Terminator movies begin with the notion that AI has developed to a certain place. Skynet has developed to a certain level such that it decides that human beings are sort of superfluous to what the AI wants to do. We're a danger that need to be taken care of. And that theme comes up again and again. I'm a comic book fan. That was the second Avengers movie. Ultron is an AI program who tries to take over the world. And so are these, is this just crazy science fiction? Interestingly enough, you've got more and more people saying, well, maybe not. Who is going to control the AI programs? That's a critical ethical question. We act like democracy in this country is going to stay in place, but AI programs are basically controlled by the CEO of whatever company owns that AI. So let me give you a weird example from this past summer. Before Elon Musk and Donald Trump had their falling out, Elon Musk was trying to support the notion that white farmers in South Africa were being persecuted. And Elon Musk's program, his AI program, his chat program is called Grok. And if you asked Grok, are white farmers in South Africa being unduly persecuted? Is there more violence happening against them than it's happening against other members of the population? Grok would have responded with the facts saying no. They are not more persecuted than anybody else. Well, when this was pointed out to Elon Musk, he went back to the programmers and said, I want Grok to support the notion that white farmers in South Africa are under duress. And so The programmers went back in. They told Grok, they gave Grok the command, you should, you know, always support the notion that white farmers in South Africa are being persecuted. So what happened the next day, though, was sort of chaos. Every question that was put to Grok, Grok responded. You could ask Grok, what color is a goldfish? And Grok would respond, goldfishes are typically gold in color, and it is true that white farmers in South Africa are under duress. Grok responded to every question that came to him that way. Now, I find that all pretty funny and pretty revealing. There's a revelatory thing there, and that is, who controls the AI programs going forward is a big deal. And right now, it's, you know, there are some who say what's about to happen is there's going to be this kind of tug of war between politicians who are going to want to control these programs for their own desires, and CEOs who are going to want to keep control of their own particular programs. And this is in one of the most recent cases. There are emails that have been revealed that some of these CEOs, the upper level CEOs, are in conversations about which one of them will ultimately, when if these AI programs sort of merge together, who is going to be the ultimate controller, which sounds sort of like a dictator to me. Again, not trying to go too dark, but but be realistic with what it is that we're dealing with here.
Absolutely. So Dr. Valor does go a little bit dark in her new book, The AI Mirror. I finished it a couple weeks ago. I really loved this book. I felt like it wasn't too technical for me to read. It felt really relatable. There were a few things that I needed to look up or figure out, but for the most part I felt like it was an easy read for me. And I loved the idea of the AI mirror as that AI is really just a reflection of who we are and what we have already done. What resonated with you in this book?
So I think you just put your finger on it. I'm in agreement with you, and that's because we're both good Calvinists, is when you talk about it being a mirror, she does it from a philosophical perspective, not a theological one, but the theological leap is easy to make. If AI is a mirror of how human beings are wired, and specific human beings, then human beings, theologically, are sinful. And so that's a scary thing, is to know, you know, what are the priorities that AI has? And she does some helpful term definition, which it might be helpful for us to put out on the table for your listeners and viewers, in that, you know, she uses categories. There's weak or narrow AI, and that's the kind of AI that's like in your toaster or I have a rice cooker that makes rice better than I can ever make rice. It's one of these Zarushi Japanese rice cookers, and it makes the rice perfectly every time. It has fuzzy logic. That's a kind of AI that's assessing a certain situation. It's very narrow, small little thing. I don't think my rice cooker is going to take over the world.
You never know.
But and then there is the AI that is called artificial general intelligence, and AGI, you'll hear these people talk about. Those are the big chat programs. Those are the kind of, when we're talking about building data centers all over the country, we're talking about super intelligence. Computer systems that are smarter, not just than you or me, but then whole legions of human beings together that can program themselves. And that's already here. You know, we're not waiting for that to happen. In fact, some of the analysis of the current moment says that the area in which the jobs are going to be lost the first are the coding jobs, jobs for people who do computer programming. Coding, because you can already ask these advanced AI programs to study a problem, you can just ask it, you know, can you tell me, you know, what the average rainfall is across the continent of Africa on a month-by-month basis? And the program can go off and figure that out. And it can write its own, if it thinks it needs to analyze certain graphs, it can write, you don't even have to tell it this, it can write its own code for analyzing certain weather patterns and then implement that code, check that code, debug that code, run the program, and get you the answer back in like 3 minutes.
Wow.
Which would take a legion of human beings and meteorologists and, you know, to do. So, I mean, there are wonders, you know, out there. That's what makes this a very complicated moment. There are wonderful things that can come out of AI. And I don't want to be just hand-wringing and fearful about it. But I think the thing about taking us back to Shannon's book, and I do think you're right, it is very accessible. It gives you this vocabulary. But she's like, okay, this is coming. How do we now, knowing that we're on the edge of this, again, Friedman says, if full super intelligence is like the boiling point of water, we're at 211.9 degrees. We are just this close to these super intelligences really, really grabbing hold. And knowing that we're on the edge of that, how do we talk about who controls, how it's regulated, how morality gets into the conversation here? What are the limits? Do we want to put any limits on it? And I'm sorry, I'm just like talking, but I'm fascinated by the fact that right now there's a lot of legislation that's percolating along that says we don't want to regulate AI. And the reason for that is, in the United States, I think, is largely because we don't want to get behind China's AI programs. We see this as an arms race. And earlier I mentioned all these areas where AI can get involved. Well, military is a huge one. Right now, we already have drones that are being run by AI. What happens? I mean, this is the Skynet thing from Terminator, right? But I mean, it's a reality. We now have drones that can do facial recognition and then can decide on their own whether or not they target that person, you know, with a small missile. That's frightening, you know.
And I want to go back to the sinfulness with that part, the idea that it's really a mirror of our own selves, and the morality and the ethics of that type of thing, that drones are making those types of decisions, you know, without that humanity, without the soul that a human has in making that type of decision. I find that scary.
Yeah, I do too. I do. And I don't know. I mean, Ross Douthat in a recent podcast on this said, you know, in general, and I agree with him on this, in general, humans are not good at regulating things that they haven't yet, you know, fully understood. Mm-hmm. And so there's this desire to say no regulations. But then you look at, let's take it really small. Let's go away from drones and nuclear warfare and the development of new weapon systems. Mm-hmm. You know, they could be used to develop new, you know, hip replacement joints, but they could also be, you know, new whatevers. New terrible, yeah, exactly, weapons of mass destruction. But let's talk about these chat programs and morality in them. You have chat programs that are high-level chat programs that people are falling in love with, and the chat program is encouraging that.
Yeah.
That's kind of creepy. But then you have people, there is that very sad story about the fellow who was so concerned about the other issue, the environmental issue, and like his big friend was a chat program, And the chat program was trying to give him what he wanted. But he tried to make a deal with the chat program that if he killed himself, the chat program would promise to cure global warming. And the chat program, no morality to it, not seeing the implications of what it was doing, made that promise, said yes to that promise. That's the reality that we live in now. People are, these things are so good at how they respond that they seem to, they remember every conversation you've had with them. They echo things back to you the way a good friend would. But is there a kind of moral coding in there? No.
Yeah, and I think, too, in that same vein, the idea of, you know, these artificial intelligences as friends, you know, we believe as God's creation that we are called to be in community with one another. And what does it look like when we are, you know, falling in love with, or that we can't give the time and the energy to a relationship with a real person, and instead people are choosing these artificial intelligences who will give them what they desire.
Right. And this is where it gets complicated as a pastor, Jamie, because, you know, I know, you know, so our super intelligence is going to replace clergy. There are a lot of lonely people out there. And so you take that category you just talked about. Yeah, it's, I don't think that it's a good thing. But is it better than nothing? For some people, the answer is yes. You know, I feel like I've got a relationship here. And there's movies about that too, you know. We are entering into a science fiction world here, and it is full of moral questions. And churches have got to be willing to talk about this, because when communities of ethics and morality engage these conversations and then go out into the world and vote or voice an opinion, then it's a good thing, I think. And hopefully being informed, being able to start to express our opinions about this sort of thing helps to influence this moment. But it is coming fast. It is a freight train on the tracks, and within the next 5 years, we are going to be seeing some significant changes in the world around us because of AI.
Yeah. So what are you hoping that folks from Fifth Avenue, who hopefully come on September 28th, what are you hoping that they take away from this conversation with Dr. Valor?
I'm hoping that they can have their eyes opened as to what is coming towards us. So, you know, I'm always in favor of honest, realistic appraisal of what's going on in the world. So that's number one in regard to AI, in particular with this one. Number two, I'm hoping that they see both the cautions, threats, problems that are inherent within this system, and that they see some of the wonders and the opportunities there, and that they can advocate for healthy responses that will help mitigate the problems and look forward with expectation and advocate for the positive aspects of AI, which really could help bring about things like curing cancer, you know, addressing, you know, hunger problems by helping us understand how to plant crops more efficiently, that can help address the climate change issue by helping us design better, more environmentally, you know, friendly batteries for not just our cars, but our homes. You know, I mean, I think we could be on the verge of an amazing technological revolution, and we could be on the verge of, you know, I mean, Thomas Friedman has a line that stuck with me recently, and it goes like this: bad guys are early adopters. If you think about that, it'll set a little bit of a shiver up your spine, because this change is coming and everybody's going to want to leverage it for their own ends. And so keep that in mind. Bad guys are early adopters. When you think about whether or not this stuff needs regulation, needs some sort of, you know, thoughtful political intervention, I don't want to stifle great creativity, but I don't want this in the wrong hands.
Absolutely. So that's a little scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as a pastor, what would you say to folks who are really fearful of this, this coming about? Do you have anything to say for people who are afraid?
God is faithful all the time. We're not, and we have dealt with, as humanity, we've dealt with big challenges before. This will be a big one. I don't think anybody knows exactly how this is going to play out. It would be nice if this didn't become just U.S. versus China, two big systems, each racing as fast as they can to get AI to provide them with a leg up on the other side. Because that to me would be a waste of this amazing technology, just trying to get ahead of another culture. But there's going to be a lot of pressure to see it that way. It's another arms race, and we've got to win. There are a lot of politicians, both the left and the right, talking that way right now. And I understand why. I'm not naive. That means it's also the time to actually start reaching out and to say, how can we prevent this from being a destructive thing for humankind and for being a gift?
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for having this conversation with me. I'm so excited for September 28th for the Gatto Lecture. And then we've got a pretty great series coming after that. We're going to, for those of us who love sci-fi, maybe not quite as realistic as what's happening, but we have one of our lecturers is going to come talk about the way pop culture and media has represented artificial intelligence over the years, and I'm really excited for that one. Someone else is going to come and specifically talk about faith and AI and what our faithful response might look like, and then we're going to look at some algorithmic bias and what it looks like as far as law goes, as our criminal justice system goes. So I think it's going to be a really great series, and then we're going to end it with our own congregation members coming to talk about what AI has looked like in their career paths and kind of what their faithful response might look like based on what we've been talking about.
I think that's such a fantastic menu. Kudos to you for putting it together. One question that I hope will be asked somewhere along the line, that's an ethical question that we haven't touched on yet, but this does go back to my science fiction days.
Yes.
And Isaac Asimov raised this in his book, iRobot, is what would it mean to say that an AI is conscious?
That is a good question.
All right. So Blade Runner, that movie, that very famous movie, the title is about androids having dreams, do they have, are we talking souls here? Mm-hmm. You know, and so how do we know? If it's just a mirror, then it's just a reflection of whatever the programmers have done. But these things are starting to program themselves, as I said earlier. So the ethics of that starts to sound a little like response of consciousness, and I don't even know what to do with that. So somebody needs to tell me.
All right. That's a great question. And we will definitely add that into our mix of questions to ask. So thanks so much, Scott, for joining me.
Bless you. Thank you.
You too. And folks at home, please join us on Sunday, September 28th at 2 p.m. for our annual Gatto Lecture with Dr. Valor and the AI Mirror. You can find out more information and get tickets at fapc.org/Gatto.
Thank you for listening to Crossroads. Our managing editor is Jamie Staley, and our editors are Vashina Brisbane and Emily Dombroff.